Welcome to this week's edition of Focus Fridays here on WKLM, which is being brought to you by
Hobrins Insurance, Home Siding, Rhodey's IGA, Millersburg Electric, Pomerene Hospital, MRV Siding, and Millersburg Tire.
Joining with me here for Focus Fridays is Holmes County Historical Society Executive Director Mark Boley. For WKLM's Focus Fridays, I'm Melissa Patrick. So thank you, Mark, for coming in today for our Focus Fridays. And let's just start all the way at the beginning. How long have you actually been involved with the Holmes County Historical Society?
About 24 years altogether. Now, if we go back in time to that period where I first started, the first year was part-time. At first there was no intention on really creating a full-time position, but what happened was Historical Society was at a crossroads back at that time. They were either going to have to get serious and create a long-range vision, a long-range plan, or they were going to have to scale way back and, who knows, maybe cut close at some point. So they chose the first one to go forward, and they hired Dr. Britton from the Ohio Historical Society. He was the director, who at that time was going out doing strategic plans for historical sites all over the state. Wonderful man. We were one of the first ones that he did. I had met him at a previous meeting and I knew what he was doing. And so we hired him first to do the strategic plan. And it was a long process because it took almost a year for that first long-range plan because we had nothing. So we had to start with something. So it took for public meetings. We held public meetings. We held private meetings. We had volunteer meetings. We had meetings that he put the data together and then gave some suggestions of guidelines. And then we, as a board, back then I was actually on the board of directors before I was an executive director and hired. So that was back in the 80s when I was on the board. We went through the process. The first thing that came out was that if we wanted to achieve those goals, we were going to have at least a part-time director. Now, at that point, it wasn't sure whether it was going to be paid, volunteer, whatever. But it was rapidly figured out by the board that nobody on the board was going to want to assume that responsibility, and nobody was going to come in and want to do it for nothing. So they hired their first director, came from Roscoe Village. As a matter of fact, a lot of people don't realize that. Unfortunately, due to health challenges that she had, she only lasted about 6 months. And everybody, at that particular time, my career was taking a diversion from my original career, which was local photographer. I had Mark's studio, and many, many people remember me from that career because I was in that for over 20-some years. And lots of weddings, lots of kids, everybody knew who I was. But I had reached a point in that career where I was burned out. So I sold out. And when I sold out, I was running then the bed and breakfast that we owned, where our studio had once been. And that was going well until we sold that. So I was kind of at a crossroads of my career. And when they lost their director, their original director, I remember Brooks Harris coming out to my house, and he didn't ask me if I wanted to be the next director. He said, "You are going to be the next director." Now, I had experience, even during my photography career, I was on the Historical Society Board of Directors, so I had background from the way it used to be. Mm-hmm. So that's why they wanted me to come in, because I knew what was going on before all this planning started. So So I was able to come on part-time. They couldn't afford, obviously, they didn't have the income back then. So they hired me part-time. My job was to execute the long-range plan and build on that and try to, go back to your original question, make perception that we were a county-wide historical site, because we are really the only county-wide historical site. That encompasses every community, not just the little individual historical societies. And the perception back then was that we were the Millersburg Historical Society, and we weren't. We never were. So that was the original intent of my job, and then rapidly after a year, they discovered this isn't going to work. I have to be full-time. So the president at that time recommended somehow or another that we bring me on as full-time, and I've been full-time ever since. So it's been about 24 years now that I've been doing it full-time.
So you're only one of two directors that the society has had.
I'm one of two directors, only paid employee. All the rest are volunteers.
Now, when did the society form?
1958. It was when it was formed. It goes back to, they were actually meeting informally a little before that, but then they actually did the legal papers and everything in 1958. And in 1961, I think, or two, was when they got their 501c3 nonprofit status from the IRS. So the first few years, they were just a private historical society without the 501c3 designation. The reason that became important was that most people know that if you are a registered 501c3, people can actually make donations that are tax deductible. You can't otherwise. So you're very limited. You have to really get with the program and, you know, get the IRS status. It shows legitimacy to your donor public, especially your bigger donors. Mm-hmm. Back then, we did not have big donors. That was the other thing that I had to create, was a rapport with all donors are important. Even donors that are non-financial donors, like volunteers that donate time, they're all important, but there's the big donors that you need to cultivate and get that base, because they're substantial, you know, they drive you forward. So all the other ones are great, all the little ones are great, but the big ones are the ones that, you know, help us
go. They give you that base.
They give you the base, right. Because they're usually, the larger the donor, the more consistently they donate. The smaller the donor, it depends on how they did that year, or if they had any extra money left over. It's like, yeah, okay, well, send them $20 or whatever. But the bigger donor looks at it from a different perspective, because they have tax incentives to give more, and they meet with their tax people and decide at the end of the year, well, I can give $5,000 this year, $10,000 this year, whatever. So it's kind of a whole package.
It's an investment for them.
It's an investment for them, really, it is. And if that person believes in your mission and you perform on your mission, that's the important thing, they will continue to support you.
Well, with that, we are going to take a little break here. We'll have more with Holmes County Historical Society Executive Director Mark Boley for WKLM's Focus Fridays. I'm Melissa Patrick. We are back here on Focus Fridays. I'm Melissa Patrick with WKLM with Holmes County Historical Society Executive Director Mark Boley. And we were getting a real good history lesson in our first segment there. And one of the things that you had mentioned that was so important was making sure to change the thought that people had that it was the Millersburg Historical Society and not the Holmes County Historical Society, which it actually is, that, the Holmes County.
Yeah, it always was the Holmes County. It was incorporated and registered by 501c3 as a countywide historical society, not local. It was the perception. It wasn't the legality of how it was set up. It's the perception that the local had, because everybody's vision of the historical society was, there's that Victorian house, that must be in Millersburg, therefore it's a Millersburg Historical Society. So part of the long-range plan was to create awareness that we are a countywide historical society and develop programming and fundraising around that concept. And that was also my goal too, because I had been on the board before and I saw the limited perspective of the historical society in the area. And I wanted to, as if I was going to be full-time, that was one of my goals initially, was to change that perception. And I knew it wasn't going to happen overnight. And it's, in many cases, it had to be generational change, because the older ones that were involved had this mindset. So you had to work through to the, like, another generation and then start. So it was a kind of a work in progress over the years.
And it's still growing.
Yes. And as a matter of fact, originally, we only had, like, if we had a program, which was rare, there would be 8 to 10 people. And we thought we were great if we got that many people there. And so right away when I took over, I said, you know, we need to expand our thinking about programming, have more programming, and have it more focused on not just Millersburg, but the whole county. We always should keep that in mind whenever we're doing programming, I said back then. So as a result, over the years, what we developed is going from 8 to 10 people. Well, you know, you've been involved for a short period of time and have seen some of our programs upwards of 300 people show up.
Mm-hmm.
And that was a result of when we developed the, I think the most important program series we ever did was the Our Town
series.
Program, which entitled was all the communities, and we've tried to hit every community.
And we're still working.
And it was very significant to not just have all those programs in Millersburg for like Clark or Glenmont, but to go into that community somewhere and give a program based on their community, so they felt that we cared about them enough to come in instead of just having them come to us. That was all part of the deal. So that's been really popular and successful. And I think even more so for the smaller communities, because it gave them a sense of identity.
And pride.
And pride.
People in this county are very proud
exactly.
of where they came from.
Exactly.
Not just from the county perspective, but their little places, whether it's Welcome or Clark or Berlin or Walnut Creek, they're proud of where they came
from. They're proud of their history. And we are the County Historical Society. We are not trying to, by any means, we work with the other smaller historical societies.
And we've got some great ones.
And we have some great partnerships with, like, the Kilbuck Valley Historical Society, you know, County Line Historical. We have a relationship not only now with programming, but with fundraising. Because we formed 10 years ago. We formed the Holmes County Heritage Partnership under our corporate 501c3. And that whole goal was, again, goes back to the original of trying to create perception that we were wanting to help the entire county, not just Millersburg. So as a result, we have 7 partners that we help raise funds for, like Kilbuck Historical Society, Clark Community Center, Friends of the Library, all kinds of nonprofits are involved in that, and we're the ones at the top that handle all the administrative stuff of it. And what does that do? Shows that we care about the other communities. We want to help. We are not in the business to compete. Matter of fact, the more historical societies work together, the more they all benefit. So when we go out to an area to do a program, we're not trying to steal the thunder from that particular community or their historical society. We want to create awareness of their history so that they can run with it with their own historical society.
And we talk with people who are in the community.
Yeah.
Sometimes get them to even present. It's hard to get people to present, though.
Yeah, right. Yeah, and it's good if you can, because they know the history of their community better than anyone else. So it's a little bit of a challenge when we're not from a community. Yeah, well, the county historical side, but they focus on their community. So it's easier to have somebody from their community do it. But it's okay. That's what we research and put together.
And it's, like you said, it's been a process trying to build up to where we are today.
Yes. And then that goes to the next level, because my long-range goal in my brain back then when I was hired was create countywide visibility, help the local historical societies, And then that sets the precedent for me when I apply for grants to show that we partner with other organizations in order to help them out. Because the first thing they ask is, are you partnering with any other nonprofit organization for this project or whatever you're applying for? So the very next thing, probably in the next segment we can talk about, is the funding increase and where it all came from.
Well, sounds like you just set up the perfect little break here to end this segment. We'll be back with Holmes County Historical Society Executive Director Mark Boley for WKLM's Focus Fridays. I'm Melissa Patrick. Jumping back in here on a Focus Fridays, I'm Melissa Patrick for WKLM with Holmes County Historical Society Executive Director Mark Boley. And in the end of the last segment, we kind of hinted at funding and how that has changed from the beginning to now, and how important it is to get funding. And so it's a lot of grant work and donations.
Yes, the total package of donations is actually a combination of a lot of different sources. In our case, let's just run those down so that people get an understanding of where we get our money. Because a lot of people say, where do you get your money to operate? Okay, so here we go. We're going to share this in a nutshell. All right, so the first thing you have, and we always had, was memberships. Okay, we have that. We have general donations that we get from the local public, some larger, some smaller. We have bequests from somebody who leaves us money in an estate. And that part of it goes back to having a long-range plan, having an awareness with the community that you are what you are and you're doing what your mission is, to make them not only want to donate every year, but more importantly, when they pass away, leave something in their estate. We never had that before, we do now. So that's a kind of an important build to get up to that point. There's the regular donors and the programs like the Heritage Partnership to raise money every year and the annual giving and stuff like that that we did in the past. But there's that next level up that you want them to be so impressed with you that when they pass away, they leave you something from their estate.
And to know it's so important to preserve this.
Right. And a classic example of that now, probably the one that sticks in my mind, is when Chris bought the $300,000 base for the glass museum that will eventually be ours because he's donated the entire museum to us over the years. Because he saw what we were doing, we were good at our mission, we were continuing to build on community, and that's important to Chris, and leave a legacy. So you want to get to the point with the big donors and everyone, and maybe not even a big donor during their lifetime. Somebody could be a small donor. Now, we never want to overlook the fact that all donors are important, because somebody may pass away and have a big estate and you don't know it, and they've left you suddenly a big chunk of money from it because they've been watching. They give you a little bit when they're alive, mm-hmm. but then they've been watching you, so they talk to their
consistency
financial planners and stuff to give it. So that's the then the other source is grants. There were never any grants that the Historical Society got prior to when I came into the picture, because number one, they didn't have the structure, they didn't have the long range plan. First thing a grant company or grant source asks for from you is, we want a copy of your long-range plan and your 501c3 status, your nonprofit status.
So it's important you got those.
Exactly. That's why that was part of that build up to that, so we could do that. And that's why I say to people, it's very important that we create the awareness, not only in the community, because many of the grants that I apply for now, I tell them in the grant application that we are part of heading off a fundraiser for other organizations in the county. That puts up the little, star on the grant, and the fact that we have a long-range plan and that we have it updated. and that we have our 501c3 status. Because the first thing they do is to go to the IRS site to see if you're a legit 501c3. There are people that have 501c3s and they've been stripped away because of not following the rules completely. So so we're talking about sources of funding. We have membership, we have donation, general donations, we have, and we don't want to forget our tour income. Our tour income for the Victorian House and the Glass Museum is a substantial part of our yearly income sources. This year probably be close to $35,000 of income just from tourists that come in.
And you didn't always have that either. That was something that came along later on with the growth.
The early years of the Historical Society were purely focused on restoring the Victorian House. That's just about their only existence was to, they bought it, they had to do something, a core group of people were committed, they dove in and they restored it, and it took 3 years, and then the income started. It wasn't a lot, because they didn't charge very much to go through that back then.
And there was a lot of hard work
and
love put into that house.
Right. Yes, very much so.
And then it was getting the Castle Club, because people don't realize they didn't come together, and you haven't always had both of them.
Yeah. So maybe in the next segment we can talk about significant events that happened to get us to where we are today.
Sounds like you're leading us right in. That is Holmes County Historical Society Executive Director Mark Foley. I'm Melissa Patrick for WKLM's Focus Fridays. We're going to step on back in here with Holmes County Historical Society Executive Director Mark Foley for WKLM's Focus Fridays. I'm Melissa Patrick, and in the last segment, we kind of ended with significant steps along the way, and there's been some pretty defining moments as we've moved forward from the 50s to now.
Mm-hmm. Yes, and I wanted to talk about that so people kind of have an awareness of where we were and where we came from, and as a result of all this that I talked about in previous sessions of what happened because of that. That wouldn't have happened if we had not done all that legwork and background getting to that point. So we talked about the first significant event was to get the nonprofit status and get a long-range plan. Actually, the nonprofit status came long before the decision. That was then moving forward to the point where then they restored the Victorian House, and you know, everybody was excited about that, but that was their focus. So then the next significant point was when we decided to do a long-range plan and get that in gear so that we could do the grants and all the other stuff going forward. And that's where I came into to full-time. So having said all that, the first grant that we actually got was from the state of Ohio to put air conditioning systems in the house. And that was prior to my tenure there, because now we're looking at have to replace those because they're over 20 years old. So that was quite a while back. That was the very first one. It was a $30,000 grant. That was significant because that laid the groundwork for us to be able to go back and show that we successfully did the first grant, because they want to see that you're doing good with what they gave you before. But then the next significant thing happened was the roof restoration project, which it was a $150,000 grant. That was the largest one to date that they'd ever gone after, and I was definitely involved in that one, wrote all that grant. And that was working with the state legislators and stuff to get that one. And we got that one nailed down. And that was around 2008. In 2012, probably the most significant thing happened. Because just a little background, the Castle Nursing Homes owned the property next to the Victorian House, including the parking lot. It was a really good relationship for many, many years. But I started seeing that probably what was going to happen in the not too distant future, the castle was going to probably either sell out or sell the properties, and we would not be able to have that synergistic use of the parking lot. And I told the board, I said, if they sell that, we're landlocked. We have nowhere to park tourists that come, and we were building on our tourism, and it was getting bigger and bigger. And so I approached Castle about purchasing the parking lot. And at that particular time, this was 6 years prior to 2012, they said we had to buy the whole property. They were in the process of selling out. The building next to the Victorian house was vacated. We had to buy the whole thing, including a house on Main Anthony Street, not just the parking lot. So we turned the offer down. Then we were worried that now that we knew that they were going out, that somebody was going to buy it. So they sold it to the current owner, I think, of Preferred Providers, all the castle properties, including the one next door, including the parking lot. So for 6 years, we lived in limbo, not knowing whether we're going to have that parking lot or not. And we reached a point in 2012 where I finally said, we've got to reach out to the real estate holding company and try to make a purchase of the parking lot. Well, they came back to us and said we had to purchase all the properties, not just, meaning in that area, not the other nursing home. The parking lot, the castle club, the house, two houses that we had for rentals. And the board at that time, we didn't really have the resources yet to build up to be able to buy that, because I had no idea what they were going to ask. So they finally reached out to us and said, make us an offer. And I negotiated with them, and it ended up that we were able to buy the entire buildings, parking lot, everything for $150,000.
Which is pretty good for if you know how much is there.
Very good. Very good deal. However, we had no idea what we were going to be able to do with this 13,000 square foot building next door, let alone be in the landlord business to rent, you know, a couple apartments and houses and whatever. So my job, of course, it grew over the years, and now I'm a property manager, I'm, you know, a grant writer, and I'm a negotiator and all this stuff. So we purchased it. That was a big decision for the board of directors at that time. And I'll never forget those meetings. And there was a few that didn't want us to do it. And it came down to the final vote. And we did get there. And then we were faced with what were we going to do with all this building. But we were able to secure the parking lot forever and ever. Amen. We actually separated that parcel off, so if the other ever got sold, we still have that for the Victorian house. That's all set in stone. And then that's when Chris came to us about possibly moving the glass museum there, and the rest is kind of history. We got some money to do the restoration. We sold one of our houses that we had bought in the acquisition, and that money we used to renovate the castle club and put bathrooms and everything in there. So here we are now. We have storage, we have a banquet facility, we have the glass museum, we have a commercial rental space bringing in income, we have some rental property, residential bringing in. So this gives you a background on where we all came from and where we are now, which is in a much better place. And the other thing, one other thing I wanted to mention about funding sources, back in the day when they started the county bed tax, that's before the city bed tax, I was on the Chamber of Commerce board when that happened, and we started receiving a little bit of funds from the county bed tax back from the very beginning when they first started it. Then, of course, the city initiated their a city bed tax, lodging tax, and so we're a recipient of also city bed tax as well. More city bed tax than county bed tax because it's more competitive. So when people say, there you go, in a nutshell, there's where all of our sources of income come in. Plus, periodically along the way, someone will pass away and leave us some money. We recently had that happen the other day. I had a nice check came in the mail for somebody had passed away, who had never actually been a member and had only been on a couple of our outbound bus trips and loved us as a family and decided when she passed away she'd left us some money.
That's always nice to know that what you're doing and the programs and the things that you're providing, helping people learn about our county's history or history in general, like with the trips, that means that much to them. That they're like, I'm going to leave you money.
Yes, it's wonderful. It's a great feeling. It kind of is kind of like the icing on the cake for all these years of building up to this. We now have built a reputation that people will, you know, think of us when they pass away, or donate to our Heritage Partnership,
or come and visit,
or just walk in. And trust me, that's why I always say, be nice to everyone that walks in the door, because it happened over the holidays several times. You give a little bit to them, you try to take care of them, make them feel special, and the guy drops a $100 bill in the donation bowl because he said that he was treated so nice when he was here. That's what's important in building the relationships up to get to that point. And now, one other note on that. Several years back, about 10 years ago, I was working at the front desk at the Victorian House. A man from Columbus walked in the door, had never been there before. I didn't know him. When he got done with his tour, he sat down at the front desk and he flopped out his checkbook and he says, "So how much does it cost to run this place?" And I told him kind of some of the things I mentioned in the segment. And he looked at me and he said, "Well, here's $500. And I said, "Well, great. Thank you very much." That man has donated every year for the past 10 years at Christmas time at least $500, sometimes $1,000. He's up to like $7,000-$8,000 that he has donated just from being nice to him when he walked in. He's not even from Holmes County. He's from Columbus. So these are, you don't have to build a local, you know, relationship. It's also the tourists that come in. They're so impressed that here's a guy that gives us, you know, every year now, you know, so.
And at the Victorian House, for anybody who hasn't been there, it's not just showing what a Victorian House looks like. It's showcasing a lot of our history for the county as well. So we're not just, we do get local people in there, but it also is sharing it with people from all over the world.
Right.
I've been there with people from Germany, the Czech Republic, and I can't think of the other countries that... Taiwan, maybe.
Oh, there almost every you can go through the guest book and there's from every country almost that exists.
And we're sharing our local history, and that's so important because we have a really cool local history.
Which leads us in one of the final segments is, what is the Historical Society do besides raising money and having a museum open?
And with that, we're going to take a little break here. That is Holmes County Historical Society Executive Director Mark Boley for WKLM's Focus Fridays. I'm Melissa Patrick. We're going to rejoin here with Holmes County Historical Society Executive Director Mark Boley for WKLM's Focus Fridays. I'm Melissa Patrick. And we've talked a lot about the funding and raising money, but the Historical Society is more than just raising funds. They provide a lot for the county.
Yeah, and that's what I wanted to talk about kind of here in one of the final segments is what is it that we can offer to, from a historical perspective, what do we do for the Historical Society? We talked about raising funds, we talked about having museums open and building, buying buildings and all that, but and building relationships. But what can we do from a historical perspective? Well, let me tell you, there isn't a week that goes by now that because of our awareness creation and everything, that people call us for all kinds of historical research. Now, this can be maybe somebody bought an old property, an old house, an old barn, and they want to know if there's any historical information regarding that property. Now, many times this is like trying to find a needle in a haystack, but we have a wonderful curator that can research stuff. We have archives, thousands and thousands of documents. And just to give you an example of what we have as a resource, we have in our one of our rooms in our newly acquired building that I was telling you about is our archive room. And in that archive room are all the old newspapers, the Farmer Hubs, whatever, from 1840 to 2010, all digitized, all hundreds of thousands of pages of these originals we were able to save when they closed the hub office. We digitized them, I should say, with a joint project with Behalt. They did the digitizing for us. We also have the Pop Barber Historical Collection, which is 6,000 pages digitized and indexed. So between those two sources, we can research a lot of information about a lot of historical stuff in the county.
And the Hannah history. And I used a lot of that.
And the way, yes, exactly. And we have, that's a wonderful Holmes County history. And also in our archive room, we have all the books that were ever written on Holmes County, from Fred Almendinger's to Brooks Harris historical sketchbooks, to all the communities that have written books, like Lakeville and
Glenmont, Nashville.
We have a resource for all of that. Plus, the big plus is we also offer space to the Holmes County Genealogy Society, which is a separate organization located in our building. They have access to our archives. We have access to their archives. So in one of their rooms in the old medical records room of the castle is all of the old court case records from the county, from way back to the beginning of the county. So you can see from what I'm telling you here is we have a vast source of information of historical data. And it's not just people, individuals. It's sometimes it's a public official will call me and ask if we have any information regarding a certain event that happened or whatever. There's all kinds of reasons why people research local history. And I'm a big advocate of knowing why history is important, because if you don't have a roadmap from the past, you have no roadmap for the future. And all the politicians and all the everything they do, what's the first thing they do when they want to create something new? They go back and look at the historical record to see what was done in the past. If it was successful, that's all historical record. So when somebody says history's not important, that's not true.
They have no idea.
They have no idea how important history is, because we would be floundering all over the place if we didn't have a way to archive and you know, that's just so important to me. So that's a big part of what we do, is not just the presence of the Victorian House and all this and raising funds for other organizations. We're in the business of preserving our history.
And people will call you, hey, I have this. Is this important? Do you want this? And
exactly. That's very important, because that goes back to what I was saying about creating awareness in the community, because we talked about donating money, but we didn't talk about, and you just brought that up, is now that we have awareness, every week somebody calls and said, now, not always do we take everything that people call and want to donate, because we have...
We may already have it.
We have an accession policy that has to have some sort of significance to Holmes County history. We can't just take a box of grandma's clothes because you don't want them. if grandma happened to be a prominent person, a Pomeranian or something like that, yes, we would take something like that. So we have an accession policy. So what we do is we ask people to submit a list of what it is they have, how it's significant that they feel to the county history, and any photographs of it that they have. And then our curator then makes a decision as to whether we'll take that into the collection. And not everything we take in by any means becomes on display either. A lot of times it's put in archive storage and then brought out for a special exhibit or something over it. So we want people to be aware that not everything you donate is going to be out all the time.
You're not going to see it when you go in.
You're not going to see it all the time, no. But it's there for their historical record. So
exactly. And for anybody who's never been in that room, it is just chock full of stuff. And trying to go through those records, there are more records than you can go through at any given time. As somebody who has been through them, it's a lot. Because our history is so cool.
It is. And also, I want people to be aware that you can call us if you want us to research something, but you can also make an appointment to come in and you can actually sit and a curator will show you how to access this. We have everything on a computer down there that if you want to come in and spend hours and hours doing it, you can.
You will, hours and hours and hours mindlessly.
Yeah.
It's so much. Well, we've got one final segment that we'll have here with Holmes County Historical Society Executive Director Mark Bulley for WKLM's Focus Fridays. I'm Melissa Patrick. One last time here with Holmes County Historical Society Executive Director Mark Bulley, WKLM's Focus Fridays. I'm Melissa Patrick, and I mentioned at the end of the last segment that you're not just doing stuff here in Holmes County and isolating yourself. You are networking with other directors, other museums, and learning ways to showcase the history we have or raise funding or whatever. But it's so important to have that networking, not just with your local societies, but statewide even.
Absolutely. And that has been my goal from the very beginning, is to belong to organizations outside Holmes County, outside of our local organizations that I've belonged to in the past. Like, you know, in the past, I've been on the Chamber Board, I've been on the Travel and Tourism Board years ago. I was on the Historical Society Board before I became director in the 80s. So I, at one point, decided that we're a member of the Ohio Historical Society History Connection. And for a good many years, I was on the board of directors for the State Historical Society. And I also was on a lobbying team back when we had an administration in Ohio that was whacking the Historical Society budget so severely. I mean, it was just a tragedy. And I was on a lobbying team that went to the State House and tried to convince them why history is so important, like we talked about in the last issue. When I was involved in that, I was on some various committees on the State Historical Society Board, and that's where I actually met Dr. Britton, that we eventually did the long-range plan. And I felt that by reaching out to a broader knowledge base on history and how to preserve it and all that, I could bring that back to the county. So we've always belonged to the State History Connection and the Ohio Local Museum Association. It's part of a wing of the Historical Society. And I also belong more recently here on the Northeast Ohio Museum Leadership Exchange. And what that is all kinds of historical societies and museums in Northeast Ohio have gone together, and we meet usually two or three times a year at a different facility around the state in that area. Our primary focus is to come together as a group collectively and discuss problems facing the historical community. The big one that I was so glad I was involved was during COVID, when people were just in panic mode. And these organizations had to get together and figure out what their plan of attack was going to be for each of their museums. So that was so wonderful to be able to have that connection. We didn't meet in person, but we met in Zoom, and we kept in touch. And so it's now become pretty much of a family. It's big organizations all the way from the Stan Hewitts to the Football Hall of Fame down to us, little Holmes County Historical Society. But we're all in it together for the common purpose. So every meeting we have like a focus group that's about a topic of problems that different ones have, and then we discuss that among us and what's the solution. Like maybe somebody over here has figured it out. So it's great.
Networking is so important.
People know me as the network king, I guess, because I believe in networking wherever I can network. Local, I don't care what it is. The more you network, the more you learn.
I think I've said it in every Focus Friday, and I would be remiss to not say in this one, it's not about what you know, it's about who you know.
Exactly.
Because that gives you access to so much more.
And never think you know it all, because you don't.
Yep.
There's always something you can learn from somebody. So be humble enough to be able to keep your mind open and learn from everyone.
And that's kind of the point of all this, is we're learning. Mm-hmm. And essentially, we're taking down history, learning what each of these jobs do, because they may change in the future. So
right.
we're making our own history here.
Yes. Every day that passes, that's history, part of the historical record.
And is there anything about your job or the Historical Society that it's important to mention before we wrap up here?
Yes. My job is important, yes, to keep the society going. But my job would not even exist if I did not have a team of wonderful volunteers. There is no way that I could possibly do everything that I do and perpetuate without a volunteer staff that is dedicated. And I tell them over and over again, without them, there would not be any historical society. So to me, the lifeblood of the organization is not just your donors and your members and all that. It's your volunteer base that keeps the thing running on a regular basis with programs and front desk and committees and everything else that has to physically happen to make it work. I can't do it. I'm a one guy. I'm the only paid person, so, you know.
There's only so much you can fit
in your bed. Without the volunteers, I don't have a job, so... I just want to say publicly that I can't thank the volunteers enough. They are the lifeblood of any organization. But
and you probably have one of the biggest volunteer groups.
About 45 or 50.
Which says something about the organization.
Mm-hmm. Right, right. And we're always looking for new volunteers.
Just so, call the Historical Society.
Absolutely, absolutely. And you don't have to worry. A lot of times people think that when I say... volunteer for the Historical Society, they think it means the front desk at the Victorian House or the Glass Museum. There, but listen, there is many more areas. You can don't even have to step foot in the Victorian House. You can be on a committee. You can be on a program committee, a food committee.
Outdoor care.
Yeah.
Flowers.
Yeah. House and grounds. I mean, it's just endless. I mean, you don't have to do...
be in the public.
Yeah, you don't have to be in the public at all. You can just do... You call us, we'll see what fits.
There's lots of opportunities.
Yes.
All right, well, thank you so much for joining in with me today.
Well, I'm glad to be here, and hopefully this enlightens people on what all we do.
That was Holmes County Historical Society Executive Director Mark Boley for WKLM's Focus Fridays. I'm Melissa Patrick. Focus Fridays has been brought to you by Hobbins Insurance, Holmes Siding, Rhodes IGA, Millersburg Electric, Pomerine Hospital, MRV Siding, and Millersburg Tire. Make sure to tune in the 9 a.m. hour each and every Friday for Focus Fridays, where we focus in on the elected, appointed, and volunteer positions happening right here in Holmes County. In the next edition of Focus Fridays, we're going to focus in on Millersburg Village Administrator Nate Troyer, all here on your hometown radio 95.3 WKLM.